I had early challenges from the get-go saying this is never going to work.
It's a new world for business.
It was quite daunting.
A world that's changing every day.
It's quite a harsh term.
And to survive, businesses are encouraged to boldly embrace new technologies, new business models, and new ideas.
To this day, it's one of my solid things I've done.
Bold Businesses, a podcast series about the bold embracing the new.
I wish I had that back then.
Powered by Vodafone.
Going global is a big dream for many Australian businesses. But how should you go about it? How do you get things right from the beginning? And how do you make sure your business doesn't suffer if things go wrong? I'm Cara Waters, small business editor for The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. And this is the Bold Businesses podcast, powered by Vodafone.
So, welcome to Soulfresh Warehouse here in Melbourne. So this is like our Victorian base, and it's also the headquarters for the business in Australia.
Today we're hearing about Soulfresh from founder and chief executive Dee Dee Lowe. And a little later we'll be joined by international business expert Alan Moore. But right now, we're surrounded by delicious, healthy food in a warehouse in Melbourne's outer suburbs.
So, yeah, we're standing in the cold room now. It's obviously pretty freezing in here. So it's at 2 degrees, and we hold all of our Nutty Bruce plant milk here and all of our Low Bros kombucha and all of our sort of vegetarian products and vegan mayonnaises and cheeses and those sorts of products here.
A little over 15 years ago, an idea for a healthy food and beverage business was hatched in a Byron Bay nightclub. With big dreams, persistence and the right people, Dee Dee Lowe has turned that idea into a global business with a turnover just shy of $100 million.
Compared to where we started, which actually wasn't too far away. So we started in Footscray about 5 kilometres away, and it was a tiny, dark, manky cold room, and I got given 2 pallet spaces in the corner and was just told not to disturb anyone there, and as long as I didn't disturb them, I'd be okay. Compared to what we have now, probably all up have about 8,000 square metres worth of warehouse space now, and I don't know how many, maybe 10,000 pallets or something like that, so it's a bit different.
Now, Dee Dee, you're a hard man to pin down. You've just come back from Europe and you're about to take off again. Did you always imagine you'd be travelling the world with your own business?
Definitely not, no. I think when the first idea of Soulfresh came about, it was really as a way of trying to take great little food and beverage businesses in Byron Bay and launch them in Melbourne and essentially keep my contact with Byron, which I just left, with the intention of really sort of growing the business and getting back to Byron one day.
And you do have very local roots in Byron. Can you take us back to the beginning when you first started forming the idea for the business?
Yeah, sure. So I actually come from a cooking background, so I was a sort of a chef, a cook by trade, and spent a lot of my early life, in the ski fields at Thredbo and at Jindabyne and travelling around Australia, cooking in kitchens and cleaning dishes. And I end up in Byron Bay with a couple of friends and had a great time and was sort of chefing in local cafes. And then I started working in a place called La La Land, which was a great little bar nightclub in Byron. And it was through working at La La Land that I got introduced to a lot of the local businesses there. But I would walk the streets and go to the local businesses and essentially try and encourage them to come to La La Land for a locals night. So we'd put on, a great night with a DJ and cheap drinks, and we'd have a whole lot of fun every night. And
it was through
that really I got to know a lot of the businesses.
So you had that experience with meeting local businesses in the food industry in Byron Bay. And what were the sort of lessons you learnt from that and your experiences at La La Land?
Well, I think Byron is one of these places where there's an amazing energy. So Byron tends to attract a certain type of person. So what was really wonderful is, when I was wanting to launch these products and take products from Byron into Melbourne, they really sort of fitted in with my view of the world and how the world should eat. And so it was all about, raw foods and organic foods and unprocessed and really just delicious stuff. And so, leaving Byron and coming to Melbourne, it was quite a sort of a shock for me because I was so used to that sort of smaller way of life. But I really felt that there was a significant opportunity. And even back then, 15 years ago, I just really felt that, there was an opportunity for more natural and organic food on the shelves in supermarkets in Melbourne.
So taking it back a bit, what did Soulfresh look like when you first started? It was hard to get cafes even interested in your products?
Yeah, it was. It So Soulfresh, when I first launched, had vegetarian organic pies, this fantastic drink called Ginger Nectar, which was just ginger, lemons, honey and water from Byron, some organic chai, and I think some organic coffee. Mm-hmm. And that was essentially it. And so
pretty small product range.
Tiny. And I borrowed a bit of money from my parents and, you know, I got a pallet of each of these goods sent down, and I found like a tiny little space in Footscray that would rent me a couple of pallet spaces. I bought a little refrigerated van, and, you know, not knowing Melbourne well, I bought a Melways back then, you know, yep. The map that
there
everyone
was no
would
Google
use.
Google Maps.
Yes, so. Totally. There was no Google Maps, and essentially just opened it up and I sort of looked around for where I thought people who would buy these products would be located. And I'd made a little product list. I had a few samples and I started walking the streets, just introducing myself, the business, what we stood for and the products that we had. And that's really how Soulfresh looked. And so there was, I'd done a very basic business plan in the preparation, but it was so scrappy. I mean, I'd forgotten to include cost of goods. I had forgotten to include a lot of expenses. And really, it was probably more a sales forecast than anything else. And perhaps actually through the naivety of doing something so badly like that, I sort of charged headfirst into it. And so it was a huge learning experience, you know, and I had no idea about invoicing. I had no idea about collecting money. I had no idea about, you know, managing shelf life on products. I just had no idea really at all about any of those aspects of business. And so, you know, I can say that Soulfresh has been 15 years of making a lot of mistakes. And
you learn from those mistakes. That's right.
You know, and I think it's one of those things where you just try not to make the same mistake twice, and you just have to work really hard to, you know, try to sort of keep the vision evolving and try to sort of meet what that vision is.
And about how much money did you have to put in to start it up?
So I borrowed $20,000 off my mum and dad. Mm-hmm. And with that $20,000, I used that to buy sort of 4 pallets worth of product from Byron, I think a couple of flights, and I took a lease on a van. And then I had a little bit of money that I used just for the day-to-day running and paying rent and things like that. And it was essentially off that $20,000 that I started the business.
And can you give us an understanding of what growth looked like for Soulfresh? Where are you now in terms of the number of staff you've got and locations and the turnover of the business?
Sure, yeah. So we started 15 years ago in January 2003, mm-hmm. And it took a year to get someone on board, which was my brother. And it took it after a year. I was sort of running out of space, and he was in Canberra and he agreed to come and help. And from that point on, we sort of shared the business going forward. And then sort of through that stage, yeah, we've grown pretty steadily. And so today we're a turnover just shy of $100 million. We have the main business in Australia, but we have also a really great business in New Zealand. We've just bought a brewery in the UK, the Brews Kombucha, and we've set up in the UK market, and we've got some great listings with some major retailers in the UK, and we're expanding out into Eastern Europe at the moment, South Africa and North America.
Wow, that's amazing. And how many staff have you got?
Just pretty much smack bang on 120.
Okay, so that's where the business has really transformed in that time from one man, sole trader.
Yeah.
When you did decide to take the business international, how did you go about that?
So I think, you know, taking the business international for us was very much the same as taking the business interstate. And so Soulfresh had started as this sort of Melbourne-based business. And, you know, through luck, actually, I was contacted by an accountancy firm called Southerton's. And they introduced me to a guy called Jeff Rubin. And so, you know, Jeff started advising the business. And really what Jeff brought to Soulfresh was this real balancing in the business, where I was all passion and all about the product and all about, you know, the growth and trying to achieve all of these things, but never delivering a bottom line. He was all about delivering the bottom line and really making us a strong business, which at various times, you know, through those early years, we were sort of right, you know, on the verge of being bankrupt, essentially. Mm. And so we first, together, Jeff and I then plotted out how we would grow around the country. And what that looked like was essentially taking the best employees that we had inside Soulfresh and giving them an opportunity to be a shareholder in a business in a different state. And so from being a business in Victoria, we then opened up Soulfresh Queensland and Soulfresh Tasmania. And we took guys who'd been working inside the business who were really passionate. We wrote them a business plan. They put in a little bit of money, which we sort of call hurt money, if you like, and we funded the rest. And that then enabled us to then expand into a different state far earlier than what we would have been able to do had we not had sort of people invested in the process.
So is it sort of like a franchise almost?
Yeah, and I suppose it's a business model, and I don't really know what to call it except that it's been incredibly successful. And I think what it's created is it's created a whole lot of people inside Soulfresh who have this total passion for the business and mm-hmm. what we're trying to achieve. And so a few years ago, we really wanted to move to New Zealand, and we just didn't have the right person. And then Nigel, who was working inside Soulfresh, who was actually a Kiwi, decided that he wanted to go back to New Zealand with his wife. And so we opened New Zealand off the back of Nigel moving back to New Zealand. And New Zealand's been this incredibly successful business for us. And so we have a model of genuine, I suppose, shared benefit, if you like. And so in the UK or New Zealand or France that's opening up or South Africa or any of these countries, in every one of those circumstances, we have someone who's a shareholder of the business who's really passionate about the outcome of the business.
You said you've sailed close to the wind a few times in terms yep. of bankruptcy. How,
yes.
how did you cope with those or what happened?
So by having a lot of heated debate internally and ultimately by having to make some pretty significant changes to the business at a few different times. Probably the first time that we ran into problems was we had a great business and we were selling to thousands of cafes. But unfortunately, cafes tend to order a small amount of product and they don't necessarily like to pay their bills. And so, you know, we had this great sort of infrastructure and business servicing all these wonderful small little cafes, but we just didn't have the cash flow. And so the profit wasn't there, the cash flow wasn't there. And so, again, it was actually with Jeff in the very early days, you know, going to the accountants for an emergency meeting and really going through the books and saying, listen, we have to get rid of half of our customers because if we keep going, you know, we're going to be bankrupt. And so that was certainly sort of a pivotal moment in terms of product issues. We developed a popped potato chip in South Africa as well, which I spent 3 wonderful months in Cape Town, actually. But
not
but
so bad.
No, that definitely wasn't so bad. But, you know, developing that product in Cape Town, we then had created this most wonderful popped potato chip. And I was very bullish and we had, you know, spent a huge amount of money on design and packaging and point of sale and all these sorts of things and ended up shipping over, I think, 6 or 8 containers of product to Australia. Literally a week or 2 weeks before those containers arrived, you know, the biggest chip company in Australia launched a similar product. You know, a $15 million advertising campaign and the quality of their product wasn't great, but we were very much just caught in this perception then around an inferior product and we were unable to sort of have the air to try and communicate our product. Mm. And on top of that, you know, a couple of weeks after the product arrived, we realized it was going rancid. And so there were all of these terrible issues. So I think we dumped sort of 8 containers worth of chips or 10 containers worth of chips. And, you know, and that was a huge, big lesson. And so when we see an opportunity now, we innovate into that space, but we don't overspend. We want to see that consumers actually buy into that product. And then if they do buy into that product, we then start putting additional funds in behind it to then start communicating it and promoting it and things like that.
And what does the next 5 years look like for Soulfresh? You've just bought your brewery in the UK.
Yes. You know, I think the next 5 years for us, we're really focused on becoming, I suppose, a global version of Soulfresh, you know, and trying to be as successful in Western Europe and the Nordics as we've been in Australia and New Zealand, extend that over into Canada primarily, and then sort of dabble maybe down into America, though we're quite scared of America, and then a little bit into sort of China. Yeah.
And why are you scared of America?
Because I know so many food businesses there who have lost themselves in America. And the American market, when we've really researched it, seems to be quite a formulaic market. And so you need a lot of money to expand around America. And most of that money is actually spent in sort of buying listings and achieving listings. And generally what happens is you bring on these investors at different stages of growth and the whole time you're getting diluted. So I think, you know, when we are doing any of these expansions, it's not expanding for the sake of expansion. It's essentially trying to expand into markets where we feel there's an opportunity for us to be successful as a business, and where we feel that the people will buy in over time as a mainstream into our idea of food.
Have you got any tips for entrepreneurs starting their own business, looking back to 15 years ago when you were starting out?
Definitely. I think naivety is actually a wonderful thing.
Everyone says that.
Yeah. Do they? Yeah, it's funny, you know, because I think there's been definite stages where I would look back in Soulfresh and I would say, what did I do? Like what have I got myself
what was
into?
I thinking?
You know, it's like, this is crazy. And, you know, and I think now that we're sort of through the other side, I look back and I say, well, so much of this stuff would never have happened had we not just dived into it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the second thing I would say is that trying to find someone who can be your voice of reason in a business, I think, is a really powerful thing, because that person, if it's the right person, will tell you things even if it's not what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you both have the same vision and you both have the right attitude and the conviction, I think you get to a pretty good outcome in a lot of cases. And so I can say categorically that without, say, the input of people like Jeff and the other guys managing Soulfresh, Soulfresh would not be anywhere close to the business that it is today.
How do you take your business global? Soulfresh founder and chief executive Didi Lowe took his business from an idea spawned in Byron Bay to the world, and he's learnt a lot along the way. When your business takes you abroad, the last thing you need to do is keep tabs on how much calling, texting and browsing the net you do. With Vodafone's $5 roaming, travel worry-free with your mobile phone plan in over 60 countries for $5 extra a day. To find out more on how Vodafone can help your business, go to vodafone.com.au/business.
Countries may vary. For Plus and Advanced plans, only your max speed data is included. T's and C's apply.
We've been speaking with Didi Lowe, the founder of Soulfresh, about his journey starting a business in Byron Bay and taking it international. Joining us now is digital expert and director of Random, Alan Moore. Alan, what are your thoughts after hearing Didi's story?
Oh, well, firstly on that, just to say that's an absolutely awesome journey that you've gone on.
Absolutely. It's an amazing journey.
Amazing journey.
Yeah.
And if you're a small business that's listening to this, or medium business, one of the key things I think I picked up that you came for originally was the business plan. Now, I know that's like to people, no, a business plan, but not about numbers. Yeah. In that business plan, you should be really looking at how does it affect your organization today? What's going to be different? Yeah. What do we need to do different? You may not be able to answer that when you first start, but look at that and the numbers, because your numbers will be important.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, for years I used to think of this idea of a business plan as being a very scary, big document. You know, you've got a SWOT analysis and you've got all this information you have to put into it. And a very wise man along the way, you know, really got me to change how we tried to do business plans. So what we do now is everything's point form. So don't try to document big paragraphs and try to justify these things. Put everything down in point form. And so a really great business plan can be 2 pages long, but it captures everything that you're trying to achieve and the known sort of risks and threats and opportunities.
Yeah.
That's a great tip. And also, I think the danger can be perfecting this business plan and then putting it away on the shelf somewhere, this perfect business plan, whereas what you actually want is a living document that, you know,
yes,
is constantly changing and evolving.
100%. It needs to be a living document that as you go through the process of do I go international, that you build it right up to the point of where you've gone through your research, you've set a budget, which is important. Now, how do you set a budget? You know, you might not want to investor. You may be able to say, I'm going to put X percent of profit. You might want to say, I'm going to pay as you go. You know, it is available to most businesses to be able to go international that have got a great product and a great service to export.
What are, Alan, the key do's and don'ts that Australian businesses need to keep in mind when they're thinking of going international?
Yeah, the key thing, and I use a phrase, don't take arrogance as complacency. And what I mean by that is, your product, you know, here can be absolutely fantastic. It can have a great brand, but really research the markets that you're going to go to. And research to me is the key element. And I don't mean researching by just, you know, looking at Google, which will help you and get some information. Mm-hmm. But a key thing, and I think you touched upon, is actually going to those markets. You know, look at where's there a gap in the market? Yeah. look at how you get your product there as well, because, you know, a small business can easily set up and do an online. You know, if you're selling a product and you manufacture it in Australia, go online. Simply set that up. Work with the local fulfillment. You know, you can, there's Amazons, there's eBays, or go it alone, do it yourself. You've got so many options that's to look at. But again, build that business plan, and as you actually go, define it with where you need to go.
Yeah. And I think that's just so true. And, oftentimes what we've found is you find opportunities overseas, and you think that they're big opportunities, but almost always the reason why it's not an opportunity is because there's some local reason why. It can be competition between suppliers. It can be retailer plans. It can be any of these things which, from the outside in, you look in and say, wow, why aren't they doing this product? It's such a huge opportunity. This is going to be so huge. But invariably, you when you actually dig into it and you get into the layers, you realize the reason why not. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really trying to find those reasons. And like what you've said is essentially going online and doing something online, you can start to actually sell in that local market and circumvent a lot of these sort of traditional issues and in the path to market that you would ordinarily experience, and then work on that as you're growing your sales and your brand online.
Alan, are there any other insights or advice that you think could help businesses?
Yeah, just from the small business perspective, where would you start? If you've got already have an online business, for example, in Australia, you've got a mine of information that you can get there through Google Analytics or software that you use. You can see where people are visiting you from a global perspective. So if you take a look at that information, you may already see you have a potential market out there. You know, and use an example of one of the customers that we work with in Australia. They didn't think that they had a market. When that was looked at, there was like 20% of their visitors was coming from overseas. So always bear in mind, even if you don't think you have a market, check it out.
The data may show otherwise.
Yeah, the data, you know, that's your key thing. You know, make data decisions all the time and you won't go far wrong.
A big thank you to Alan Moore and to Dee Dee Lowe from Soulfresh. For our final episode of the season, we'll be hearing how a lover of niche sports started an online business that services everything from Australian cricket to the local bocce comp. And we'll also be getting tips for keeping online businesses cyber safe. I'm Cara Waters, and this has been the Bold Businesses Podcast, powered by Vodafone.